Standing light.
And you're going down.
Legacy. Survival stories.
Welcome. My name is Dan Latremoy, and this is another excellent episode of Legacy Survival Stories. As a matter of fact, folks, this is going to be the end of our season one. So this is our season one finale. And in recognition of that incredible fact, we've brought back some of the stars of season one, including none other than Mark Carew and J.D. Waters. So that's Jeff Waters, by the way. So we'll just do a quick recap on Mark, who is a longtime mariner and oil and gas worker. He started as a commercial diver, worked his way up. He's been all over the world doing boats and oil and gas work. And Jeff Waters, JD, is a longtime mariner as well, all over the world as well. 30-something years, I think.
33. My wife keeps reminding me.
I bet she does. 33 years. I think the last large section of that has mostly been chief mate stuff.
Chief mate stuff, laying fiber optic cable mostly.
Okay, that's fantastic. So here we are now, and we're taking a different tact on this episode. So I gave these guys, when they were joining us today, a little bit of a precursor that we're not doing the gritty, horrifying, near-death experiences, although depending on how these questions go, there could be some near-death answers. But we're taking a different tact, and we're going to explore some maybe of the more humorous aspects of survival and emergency situations. So basically, I'm going to pose some questions and some scenarios, and then we'll let the discussion develop as it does and rolls into whatever interesting stories or jokes come out of it. So let's begin nice and easy. Here's what I need, and Mark, we'll start with you.
Okay.
I need tools from the kitchen that you could use to survive a shipwreck.
Oh. Yeah, cold call there. You need to think about.
Yeah, straight out of the blue. So there's probably some obvious, easy, low-hanging fruit there.
Well, I'm thinking a blender for my drinks. Is it for cocktails?
Are you assuming that your shipwreck is going to turn out better than most shipwrecks do?
I'm going in his lifeboat if we're getting the margaritas.
Margaritas?
Yeah. Okay, let's put context then. Let's go ahead and say that you're in a lifeboat.
Okay.
You know what? And let's go ahead and say we were on the Titanic. Because everyone's familiar with the Titanic. You're now in a lifeboat from the Titanic. And if you could have grabbed some things from the kitchen of the Titanic, what would be, like, if you had the choice? The whole kitchen is there, all the tools and appliances and whatever. And let's pretend that you could use power if you needed to on the lifeboat. So what would you grab?
Me, I'd grab water for sure. Okay. Tuna fish is something that I always have on the back of my mind when if I'm thinking about abandoning. I've even seen YouTubes where you don't need a can opener. You can rub it against a rock for a long enough time and you can get the cover open.
So wait, are you talking about tin tuna?
Tin tuna, yeah. Have you ever seen that?
I have not.
So you take the tin and you lay it on a rock or some hard surface and you keep rubbing it and then the lid pops off. So it's kind of like a good skill to have in case you're ever somewhere without a tuna fish can open.
Tuna rubbing. That is a fine skill. But no, it's actually funny that you would go to tin tuna. JD's having a field day with this. Because, when I was thinking, the kitchen, I thought there's knives and tool type things in there. Oh. And you're like, I want the tin tuna.
Well, you got to eat, right? You can. So obviously a knife would be good.
No, you don't have a knife. You took your tin tuna.
That's all I had.
No, we'll give you.
So water and tuna. That's my answer.
Okay, and JD, what would you add to that if you could?
Peanut butter.
Oh, a good one.
Peanut butter. You don't need a knife.
No.
Hopefully, it's got a screw top, and I don't have to rub it on a rock.
By the way, Mark, where are you going to get a rock on the lifeboat? By the way,
I wasn't going down in that room.
Oh, I thought you said it was an island. Did you say it was an island?
I certainly did not.
I'm sure I heard island.
It was a shipwreck.
Oh, shipwreck. Yeah. I just pictured myself on an island after the shipwreck. All right, we're on a lifeboat.
All right, so if it's a lifeboat, okay, so we got water, tuna, and we got peanut butter? You want to take anything else?
Well, he's already got the blender for the margaritas, so I can't grab that. Yeah, knives are always a good one. You can always use a knife for something.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll tell you what. We'll leave it at that for now. So we got water, tuna, peanut butter, knives, and we might revisit that as the stories evolve here.
There was a chef's knife on one of the ships. I took it away from the chief cook, and he was absolutely aghast that I took it from him. It would have been a good one to have because it had the wooden handle, and it had the duct tape that was holding the handle onto it. And I asked, how do you clean that? He said, we clean it every day. I said, you clean the duct tape? No, we put fresh duct tape on every morning. So I could have had duct tape, I could have had a little bit of wood, and I would have had a knife. I got three tools in one. It's a three-in-one.
That would have been smart.
But you have a knife and an axe and a lifeboat anyway.
Yeah, the axe and the lifeboat's just there for crowd control anyways.
Yeah, attitude adjustment. All right, so let's go down a different path, but still from the residential side, the accommodation side of a ship. So now let's say, what are the things you would take from your bedroom into a survival situation? So what things from your bedroom could you use as a survival tool? This isn't necessarily a family show, so you've got a little bit of latitude here. But
oh, dear.
Yeah, JD, we got to start with you on this one.
I'm going to grab whatever book I was reading because it'll be escapism. I can get in the boat and it'll something to stave off the loneliness. Or if I'm with the crowd of them, I can tune them out.
So you're grabbing a book?
I'm grabbing a book.
Okay. All right. Any particular genre? Any particular... Are you talking like Tolstoy, something that that's going to take you 8 days to read?
Absolutely. I could be out there for 30 days in that lifeboat. That's what that life raft is certified for, 30 days. So I got to have War and Peace if I have that in the log.
something with some heft.
Yeah.
Okay, Mark, what are you taking?
Me, I'm going for my toothbrush and my toothpaste because after I'm eating all that tuna fish, my breath's going to be real stinky.
So you're going to be the one person on this lifeboat that's got nice, minty, fresh breath.
But what's really in your cabin? There's nothing in there. You got your toiletries up in the bathroom.
So pillows, you don't want to grab the extra blankets for warmth, for comfort?
There you go, warmth.
Your pajamas, your toothbrush is not bad, which you can also fashion into a shank.
You could protect
yourself if you need to. Well, listen, you might need that toothbrush as a shank when everyone else is eyeballing your tuna on day three or four and no one else is eating anything. they're starting to give you this shady eyeball for that tuna.
Oh, my.
Okay. All right. Next question. If, and we're going to go back to Mark for this one.
Okay.
If you're going to be stuck in a life raft for the next, you don't know how long. You've abandoned ship. You're going to be in a life raft. It might be tomorrow. It might be weeks. It might be months before you get rescued. What member of the Looney Tunes, if you can only choose one and you have to choose one, what member of the Looney Tunes are you going to take on board with you?
Oh, that would be easy. Foghorn Leghorn. Remember that guy?
Boy, you in the wrong lifeboat, boy.
So
he would keep you entertained without a doubt. He'd be just going on and on and on. I think that would be definitely – Elmer Fudd would be good. He'd be good for a laugh.
He'd be hunting Wabbit.
And he comes armed. So,
he comes armed.
You can protect your ship or your lifeboat from, I don't know, I guess pirates are probably not really stalking a lot of lifeboats.
No.
I've seen them steal lifeboats before, but yeah.
Stealing lifeboats? What?
Oh, yeah. We were over in West Africa. They came out alongside of us. They had a lifeboat. And I don't want to know where the lifeboat came from.
They came alongside. They were already in a lifeboat?
They were in a lifeboat. They were trying to sell us local wares and items, and they had a lifeboat. It was an open man, probably about a 100-man open lifeboat.
So like a big old Titanic style?
A Titanic style, a fiberglass one. They had a hole cut in the back, and they had an outboard motor shoved down through the middle. Oh. Because lifeboats won't sink, it didn't sink, and they had a 5-gallon bucket. And the guy was standing beside the bucket. It was open top, and there's a hose in it. That was the gas tank.
Oh, wait. So,
an open lifeboat.
Say that again?
An open lifeboat.
I'm with you.
And by the back seat, they had already the rudder was long since gone. They actually cut a hole in the bottom of the boat and put a outboard motor down through, like an azimuthing drive.
So just kind of jammed it in there.
Jammed it in there, and they had a 5-gallon bucket full of gasoline, which is slopping all over the place. And the guy's got the fuel, instead of having the fuel tank, he's got a hose coming off the engine stuck into the top of the 5-gallon tank bucket.
You got to give points for creativity.
Creativity, absolutely.
And you know what? Let's say that the fuel tank, that's probably not going to meet, any safety code.
It may not have been SOLAS approved. Mm.
But the idea of, because a lifeboat doesn't sink, so cut a hole in it and jam, just ram an outboard bottom end through it. That's actually not the worst idea I've ever heard.
You know what? My grandfather did that with his dory in Newfoundland. It was an outboard motor. What he did is cut a hole in the bottom of the boat, and he had a vertical box made.
A trunking
above the waterline. He put his engine down, and that's how he had an engine on the back of his dory, because you couldn't get a long shanked outboard motor, and that's what he had. So that's kind of what I grew up with.
Interesting.
So that's.
And I thought these guys had an original idea.
No. Newfies were way ahead of that one.
Newfies have long been at the forefront. Oh, God. That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. All right. Okay, so that actually, where were we at? Looney Tunes.
Yeah,
so,
what's your Looney Tunes? Yeah,
JD, if you had to pick one.
I think Roger Rabbit.
Roger Rabbit?
Roger Rabbit.
He's not a Looney Tunes.
Not a Looney Tunes? Oh, he's Looney Tunes.
There is a fairly famous rabbit that's among the Looney Tunes.
This isn't a family show, is it?
What's up, Tom?
Yeah, the
that guy.
Carrots and such.
Yeah, Bugs Bunny. Rabbit stew wouldn't be too bad.
No, well, you can do that. You could totally. I was when you said Foghorn Langhorn, I was
thinking to eat them.
Yeah, I thought you were saving, for food in a couple of days.
Not a bad idea. I like the way you think.
Probably tastes just like iguana.
Have you eaten iguana?
I don't know.
I did. It tastes just like Foghorn Langhorn.
Seriously?
Yeah, they walked it up the gangway, and I said, we're not keeping a pet on board. That's okay. It's okay. Good soup.
Tastes like chicken?
The next day when we had the soup, it tastes just like chicken. Uh-huh. And that's when they told me what it was.
Yuck.
Mm.
Interesting.
Not bad with a little bit of green onions.
I think I would eat iguana. I would have no issues with that. I ate pigeon once. That was weird.
Oh.
Which I only ate because how often in your life are you going to get the chance to eat pigeon? And there it is on the menu. This was in Vanuatu. Oh. And there's pigeon on the menu. So, I'm never going to see this again. So, I got to try it. Needless to say, I also ordered myself something regular so that I could try the pigeon and then immediately kind of shuffle that plate off to the side.
Well, I ended up in the starter menu in the Faroe Islands was puffin noodle soup. It was rather spicy.
Puffins, like puffins, like we have it out here.
Is there any other kind of puffin?
Apparently not.
Apparently not.
No, Newfoundlanders eat them. They're not supposed to, but they get caught in the nets. So they actually dive down, and then they get caught in the gill nets, and it's somewhat of a delicacy.
That'd be the bycatch.
Yep.
They're kind of a weird bird because they don't, they kind of suck. Like, they're not good at being a bird. Like, they don't fly very well.
No. They taste like Fruit Loops.
I had the spicy Fruit Loops.
That's the one redeeming quality about puffins is their flavor.
Yeah, I was sitting there. Here I am with the starter menu in the Faroe Islands, and we started with the puffin noodle soup, and I'm eating it. It's like it's a little spicy. It's actually quite good. I think these are protected where I live.
They are protected.
Yeah, they are here for sure. Because there's only like two places in the whole province you can even see them. There's a Pearl Island or Seal Island, the one outside Mahone Bay, like outside Chester. There's one island out there. And then there's a spot in
Cape Breton.
Yeah, Cape Breton. There's,
and it's that's up around Meat Cove or somewhere.
And that's it. Those are the only places you see them. Okay. All right. Well, that was a good question.
So he said rabbit. I said rooster.
Okay.
Both places taste like just like chicken.
And now I got to think if I was going to pick a Looney Tune.
Yeah.
You know what? Give me the Roadrunner.
Yeah.
He has been evading. He's been evading his fate for far too long, and on a lifeboat, even the Roadrunner's not going to outrun anybody.
Also.
All right. Okay. So next question. And this is one that I think is going to get some good conversation going.
Oh boy.
All right. So, and JD, you're up first.
Uh-oh.
Name a food you would not want to consume before you're going to be in a life raft for an extended period.
Oh, God, don't let it be Mexican night the night before.
Now, by the way, for the folks back home, in a life raft, even the heartiest, most stout of sailor is going to have some real issues with seasickness. You don't have a good view of the horizon. You don't get fresh air. You're in a little bobbing rubber bouncy thing out there in the middle of the ocean. Everybody gets seasick over a period of time in a life raft.
Yep.
Everybody.
My grandfather used to say to me, he asked me once, he was a captain, and he asked me if I got seasick. I said, well, I haven't got seasick yet. I don't get seasick. He said, no, you haven't gotten seasick yet. You just haven't been out in rough enough. And then I got out in the rough stuff, and I threw up to the point I threw up blood. It's like, okay, well, that's what he was talking about. Oh, yeah, definitely Mexican night. I don't think I'd want anything spicy, greasy, anything with refried beans, and then 25 people in a 25-man life raft. No.
No, because you know what happens.
When the first one
throws up.
That's it. I started my career on a passenger ferry as a steward, and you had one go, and that was it. It was a domino effect. If you're cleaning up for one on the run over to PEI, you're cleaning up 30 or 40.
Mm-hmm. Wait, so you started on the PEI ferries?
I'm originally from Pictou, so.
So that part I knew, but I didn't. I'm just trying to, like, I've been on the ferry to PEI, and that is not what I would consider a rough ride.
And then we get the age difference. And I was on the older vessels. My first boat was built in 1957. I was on the old Lord Selkirk.
Yeah, but it's still a boat. It's the body of water in between here and there is not a...
And I've been on for the last crossing of the day when the rest of the crossings are canceled.
Mm. Oh.
Oh. And when people start looking at the water coming over the open deck on the old Selkirk or the Confederation saying, oh, this is great. We get a cruise to PEI and we get a free car wash.
Well, I would also say
salt water.
Save you from swabbing all the decks after. Right?
Absolutely. Yeah, they just swabbed it for me. Yeah.
All right. So, Mark, food you would not
I've eat. Got lots of stories about seasickness. People think, fishermen can't swim. In Newfoundland for some reason, but we couldn't afford swimming pools and the water was too cold to swim in, so fishermen go to sea and can't swim. I went to sea and get severely seasick and on small boats. On big boats, not so much. But I've been so seasick, it's worse than any hangover, drunk sickness you've ever had or...
What I usually tell people when I'm trying to relate seasickness is because almost every adult is somewhere in your life you've had that hangover, like the I'm never drinking again hangover, the heaves and all the rest of that stuff. But here's the thing with that hangover, deep down in the soul of your being, you know that, first of all, you did this to yourself.
Yep.
And
self-inflicted.
Second of all, if you can get through today and get a little water in there, like tomorrow is a new day. Like there's a bright future there. But with seasickness, take away that hope of tomorrow. Yep. Like that just doesn't exist. You just get sick once and then you're immediately in the queue to get sick again.
Like, and you say to yourself, I'm out here for 30 days and it's not going to get any better. So anyway, sailors are really mean, especially when you're new. And so I had one man, and this is a true story. He told me, hey, Sonny, you know what? Cure for seasickness, go down and drink water out of the bilge. He says, you'll never get seasick again. That's what I did. And me, very naive, I guess, at the beginning, went down and looked down into the bilge.
That's not even humanly naive.
It's gross. Anyway, so I said, I'm not drinking that stuff. But I did think about it. I would have done anything to cure this seasickness.
But that tells you something. Like, that's how bad it is. If you went around on a long cruise or let's say an offshore deployment or something like that, if you went around on day two on like hour 30 or hour 36, mm-hmm. if you went around with a revolver and said, all right, who's ready?
Yep.
Honest to God, most people would be like, yep, get it. Point it right in my ear. Don't miss it.
I had another guy tell me, eat apples. He says, that'll cure it. And the acidicness from the apple. So my answer to your question is anything. I would not eat anything acidic if I knew I had to abandon the next day. So anything like apple juices or anything.
Avoiding the fruit stuff.
Oh, terrible. Yeah. Because anyway, soda crackers were my final answer for getting somewhat of a reprieve. But I tried dopamine, and I turned into a dope, and I couldn't. Oh, it was terrible.
Am I correct in saying the soda crackers was really just so that when you did throw up, which was inevitable, it was relatively painless?
Yeah, it sucked up whatever that acidic stuff was to just made it a little bit better. It's pretty.
At least you didn't feel like you had the dry heaves after you got some crackers in there.
So anyway, my answer would be anything acidic, such as fruit juices and anything liquid like that, because I do know what that one's like.
Well, being the chief mate on board the boat, I'm kind of like the mom or the high school guidance counselor at times. Do you know why sailors drink apple juice?
I don't think I knew that sailors drink apple juice, but okay, I'll bite. No, I don't.
Unless you're with the Polish, which is another conversation. The reason why sailors and seafarers will drink apple juice is it tastes exactly the same coming up as it does going down.
Well, there is a certain weird logic there.
Yep.
although I got to go with Mark on the anti-acid stuff.
Yeah.
I've tried it. Same as you guys. I try this, try that. And, you know, I go out there with a full stomach, throw it up. Go out there with an empty stomach, throw it up. I did find that when I had something, let's say loose, like a drive a big extra large double-double into me, something that would slosh around in that would bring it on worse. So we did it a lot worse then.
I was out. I used to race a lot of sailboats from Pictou to Charlottetown, and it was a friend of my father's, and I was seasick. I was bad, and we're in a 25-foot boat, and like Mark says, you know, smaller boats, there's a lot more movement.
Yeah.
And I was young enough and naive enough and seasick enough that Owen says to me, he says, well, you understand what the problem is. It's in a fluid imbalance. It's the fluids in the water and the fluids in you. So if you have a glass of the seawater, that would, you know where this is going.
Who did this to you?
A friend, a close friend of my father's.
Sailors do that to each other. It's initiation, big time.
And again, I'm about 13 or 14. I'm
willing to try anything.
I'm willing to, at this point, you know, I'm still about 6 to 8 hours away from Charlottetown PEI. And I'm like, okay. I'll give this a try. I put the glass of water. I get the seawater out of the Northumberland Strait. I take a drink out of it, and it immediately comes right back up. And he just looks at me, deadpan, and says, "You feeling better now?"
So he wanted you to throw up.
That's a mean thing to do.
Well, as Mark says, that the seafarers, we will do absolutely nasty, mean things to each other at times. Not out of malevolence. It's, you know, just for our own entertainment.
Thanks for the clarification. So
absolutely.
I'm not doing this to be mean. I'm just doing it because it makes me laugh.
So coming back from Norway once, we're in a bad, bad storm. We're headed for the Caribbean, and we're somewhere.
At least your destination is an improvement. I mean, Norway's nice, but.
Well, we've come below the Arctic Circle at this point. And we've had our Arctic Circle ceremony. We've done all that. And then we're somewhere west of the Shetland Islands. And I'm using the Shetlands as a lee. And if you've ever sailed up there, there's nothing there. It's like the Magellan Islands. There's just nothing there. So I think the weather's improved to about 18 meters. And the little...
18 meters.
Seas.
18 meters seas.
And it had improved at that point.
So, by the way, folks at home, there's your conversion. That's ballpark 60-foot waves. And if you're talking sustained 60-foot waves, what you're actually saying is that your peak waves are going to be another 20-30% bigger or smaller than that. So you can see quite a lot more than that.
I wasn't measuring them at that point.
No.
So we're in about day three of this, and... I still love driving a boat, and the watchman's up there with me, and he's white, and he looks at me and says, "Chief, can I use the comfort room?" And yeah, you go use the bathroom, go right ahead. He comes back, and he's kind of cleaning himself off. It didn't all quite make it. When he threw up, it didn't all make it in the bathroom. And I'm looking at him like, "Do you want to take a walk around, go do a fire watch, go do your fire rounds, take a moment. It's the visibility is good. I'm okay for a little bit. You go collect yourself and hopefully don't throw up again on my bridge, and come on back up. Unfortunately, when he went down to the cruise mess, there's the bosun. Bosuns are cruel, nasty individuals. They run the deck with an iron fist. So the bosun's looking over at this guy and saying, "So you're seasick, huh? Did you notice that the chief mate doesn't get sick? Yeah. You ever wonder why? Yeah. Well, he drinks fresh milk."
Oh.
Well, we didn't have fresh milk because we're at sea. We can't get fresh milk. So we've got this long life stuff. Anytime you take milk and you can put it on a shelf for a year to 2 years, it's not milk. So
although let's be honest, I think we're splitting hairs here. Whether it's fresh or not fresh, I can see where this is going.
Oh, absolutely. It goes in a bucket in a minute. So anyways, this guy downs about a liter of this long life milk. And immediately it comes right back up like a boomerang. And now, I mean, the bosun's now got his entertainment for weeks. And the poor little guy's got to clean it up. And he comes up to the bridge and says, he looks at me and he's whiter than he was when he went down. He says, "Chief, can I have a transfer to another boat?"
Well, I got a good story. We were at Sable Island drilling for oil, and I was on a supply boat. And the jackup oil rig that we were servicing was stationary, so not moving. And really foggy for about a week, no helicopters. So they decide to put people down onto our boat so that we can take them ashore.
The passenger transfers.
Yeah, passenger transfer.
Oh, my.
So from a stationary jackup platform, they would come down this Billy Pugh thing that you had to stand on and hang on to. And then they would land on the deck of our rolling boat. In Sable Island, the water was only about 200 feet deep. So the waves are so different than the Grand Banks. The waves are fast. And it's a fast-moving wave because it's shallow water. And I got to tell you, it was funny. It is funny. So we would watch the people as they got down trying to collect their suitcases, literally trying to find their sea legs and trying to walk from the back deck to the accommodations. And we would...
So we're talking 100 feet?
We would bet, yeah. We would bet who would throw up. That guy there, he's going to be the one that's going to throw up. No, I think it's this guy. So then we'd be watching. Oh, there he goes. That's the guy. I won. You know, we would bet on who's going to throw up on the way into the accommodation. And that was funny, but like it wasn't funny for them.
No, anybody... I mean, seasickness is weird because it is as miserable. Like a person who is seasick, you would happily sell your soul for even an hour or two of reprieve. Like happily, take my whole family's. I don't care. But it doesn't kill you, as miserable as it is. Well, what's the old joke, right? Exactly. First you're scared it's going to kill you, and then you're scared it's not going to kill you. But it doesn't, right? So you can get through it. So that's why there's a certain amount of, I won't say guilt-free to laughing at a seasick person, but you know they're going to make it. Well, that's dirty though. The milk thing, that's not nice.
Oh, no.
The bosuns are mean though.
Oh, they're...
All right. Okay, here's one for you. Next question. You're going to have to survive on an island. So we're talking like, Tom Hanks' Castaway Island, Shipwreck Island kind of thing, right? A couple of trees, maybe the occasional seagull, a few fish, but there's really nothing on there.
And a can of tuna and a rock.
Well, if you thought to bring it. I brought my knife. Thank you very much. One stupid can of tuna. All right. So here's the question. Famous person currently alive. Don't care who it is. Who do you want on that island with you and why?
Peter.
So we'll start with, we did JD first last, so I think we're at Mark this time.
Peter Gibbs.
You want Peter Gibbs. So another star of this show. Surviving on an island, you want him? Okay, why?
Well, he's the man that I'd want to have on my side if it's a life or death situation.
Keep it in mind. Now we have to explore all the facets of this. So like one of my first ideas was like Shaquille O'Neal.
Oh.
Because he's humongous, he's funny, and if I have to eat something later on, well that guy's gonna last me a while. Yeah. But here's the problem with Shaquille O'Neal. Is that what if he gets hungry?
That's right. He's going to eat you.
And he's big and humongous. And
so back to the Peter Gibbs statement. Now, I believe Peter Gibbs, he could make a mess of a person if he wanted to.
Oh, he's very
well. And it would be nice to have him at your back in a fight. But I don't know that I want to be fighting him for the one seagull on the island or something like that.
But you done with that tuna?
He could also tell enough stories to keep you entertained for a lifetime. And anything's going to attack you, he's going to attack it first. And he's the first guy that pops in my mind. I don't know why he was supposed to be here in this group today, but he was busy.
Okay, well, that wasn't exactly what I had in mind. But all right, we'll take that and we'll roll that. JD, you got one?
Being a child of the 70s and 80s, I got to have MacGyver. I mean, he could make like a turkey dinner out of
duct tape and Elmer's glue.
Yeah.
And his trusty jackknife.
He wouldn't even have a can of tuna, and he can make dinner. peanut butter surprise. What?
I seen him use chewing gum wrapper, like the aluminum wrapper on a stick of chewing gum to.
I think he stopped an explosion.
He used it to arco the wire from one to another to stop a bomb blowing up. I was thinking, oh, that's a great idea.
there are some physics problems that they didn't bother to address on that show. You know, they redid that show.
Yep.
No.
And they got They did, and they got 5 seasons out of the new version of it. I tried to watch it, and it turned out to be a terrible mistake because not only did I find the show appallingly bad, but my wife and daughter fell in love with it.
Oh, yeah.
So I had to put up with it. They loved it. They crushed it. They couldn't get enough of it. Where can we get the next season?
The guy was a good-looking guy. I don't know his name, too, but they were kind of girly guys. So.
He was pretty.
A goodly man.
He's a pretty man. Okay. Now, well, I guess I got to answer that question,
too. Who's your guy?
Well, now you threw me for a loop. I was, like, thinking big, you know. But now I got to think, right? Who can help me out, protect me? And, you know, I can eat if it all goes terribly wrong. We'll have to loop back. I probably want a sports star of some kind.
Really?
Yeah. Well, so with a sports star, you get somebody who you know is physically able, but you also, I also have this thing in my mind where like a sports star is, they're really good at one thing, and they've probably had a relatively easy run of it if you're enough to make it big as a sports star. So I feel like after a few days, their spirit is going to crumble a little bit. And, and there's my food for the next little while. So they've been great for a few days. And now I've got so I won't pick a sports player in particular at this point. Especially, I don't want a football player because they could eat me.
You want like Andre the Giant or somebody like that?
Oh, heavens no.
No, you need someone with survival training, someone who knows how to survive.
That's what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to be.
No, but the hardcore. Like, we can do it for a week. But yeah,
we can talk about it. All right. Okay. I got one last question. And this is an important question.
Where are you getting these questions, by the way? They're really strange.
Google.
I made them up. Honest to God. Although this last question, I did get help from a colleague. Who I'll tell you guys offline later on. But so here's the last question, and it's a doozy. And this is to decide who wins the contest.
We're tied right now.
Yeah, you're currently tied.
We're tied. Okay. Yeah.
All right. So here it is. Pickup lines to use on your rescuer. That's right. So when whoever it is, a Sartek or somebody's Lauren or Peter Gibbs, because clearly that's who Mark's got in his mind. he's cooking up a fantasy right now. So
oh no, my eyes.
So what is the pickup line that you use on your rescue? What is the charming way that you try and flirt with your rescuer?
You got a pretty helicopter.
Got a real pretty helicopter. You got a real purdy suit. What do you got, Mark?
A pickup line.
He just jumped into first place now.
So. Yeah, he's winning. I got to come up with something good. So you have, how are we being rescued?
So it, you, obviously, you know, it's a female.
It could be.
Okay.
It could be. Again, you. I mean, I didn't bring up Peter Gibbs. You did. So, but
I am in love with him. Come on.
It's been a long time in the life raft.
But yeah, sure, it could be. There's no reason. It can be a female. It could be whatever you want.
Okay. Let's say it's JD. Okay.
Oh no.
Where you been all my life? I don't know.
It's hard, isn't it? It's hard to think of something off the cuff.
It is, yeah.
I'm going to have to use that when I'm teaching from now on.
Yeah, well, if you're going to be rescued, you might as well at least give some gratification to the person who's doing the rescue.
Well, I got one. I could say, hey, honey, you must be from Kentucky because you're the only 10 I see, Tennessee. God. Oh, that's God. A bad pickup line. I tried that once and it didn't work.
The more I think about it, the more I like it. So sooner or later, that's going to make it into my. See what the wife says to that one later on.
Tennessee.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll call that a draw because those are both some good pickup lines. And with that.
What was yours again?
Yeah, I got a pretty helicopter.
Oh, I like that one. I'm going to give that one to him.
I like when he I like the accent he throws.
Yeah, that accent is kind of like a little creepy. And
if you want, you know, we can do a bonus question. Oh no, we already kind of did that one. I was going to say if you were going to survive in the woods and you could pick a famous person alive or dead, but we sort of covered that already, yeah. So we'll skip that. Okay, well that's probably a good place.
What about you? What about you? Your pick 'em line.
Oh,
you got to do something here.
Oh,
pick 'em line.
Yeah, geez. I do need a pickup line.
I remember you telling me the story about Survivor and how when the contestants hadn't taken a bath or a shower for a very long time. So I can just picture me being on a desert island for a long time and not having taken a bath or a shower and real stinky. And I don't think any pickup line would work.
Well, it depends which side you're on and what your, you know, what your standards are. That was weird that people don't realize that about the show. The people when they get to location, they're all, you know, frou-frou'd and groomed and waxed and, you know, buffed and teeth are all shiny and everything. And then they have to, you know, get kicked off a boat or whatever into the water. And then they're on some weird location for, it doesn't take very long, right? Take away your tweezers and your clippers and your, you know, your scissors and all that stuff. And it only takes a little while before all that stuff comes back in and it's pretty manky. And, some of them, there was some early contestants that were very much clothes optional.
Oh.
Yeah. And
the first couple of seasons, there was a lot of negative.
I think that the guy that won the first season.
Hatch.
Well, okay, since you guys remember it, here's the one survivor story you get for today. So the first show I worked on was the All-Star Show, the first All-Star Show.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so that's when they brought a bunch of the different winners and fan favorites from the first first seven seasons back, of whom Richard Hatch is one of them.
Oh, yeah.
So I arrive on set, and I'm teaching I'm running this boat, that boat, and they kind of bounce around to different boats and different jobs. But what they quickly decided they wanted to do with me was assign me to one of what they call a tribe boat. So what they try and do for the people that are on the beaches, so the tribes, like the contestants, they try and maintain the illusion of isolation. Mm-hmm. So you've got this tribe over here and this tribe over here and this tribe over here. And what they try and do is make it so that the same producers and the same boat and the same skipper are the same people that they see all the time.
Okay.
So that they don't understand there's a crew of 400 people, right, that is, you know, on a different island 10 miles away kind of thing. So I get assigned to this tribe, and guess who's in the tribe?
Hatch.
Richard Hatch, among several others. So one of the first days that I'm taking them to challenge, so which is a big event on the show, right? Like, so, you know, there's lots of movements that are going back and forth and camera crews and producers back and forth to the beaches all the time. And that's mostly what you do. But when it's challenge day, which they've spent, you know, a lot of time setting up, now you go, you've got a special ceremony, you know, special sort of format for picking up the contestants at the beach. And the way we were doing it at this particular beach, because it's a shallow beach, we actually had to throw our anchor off the bow and then put the boat stern in.
Catch your way in.
Yeah, that's right. And that way we could get in close enough that they could basically just climb over the back of the boat. So now you got to picture this. My deckhand is actually in the water, holding the boat in place. The bow is pointed out away from the shore with the anchor, and I'm standing at the back of the boat, and I'm giving one hand to the people as they board, mm-hmm. and passing them to my other hand, and kind of passing them on into the boat. And so if you can walk through that motion with me, right? You're taking one hand here.
I'm afraid where this is going to go.
I'm terrified.
I'm not liking this story.
So and then with my other hand, kind of pass them onto the boat, and I've already extended my first hand back to where you can see where this is going.
Oh,
so
no.
I pass a couple of people, and then Mr. Close Optional, Richard Hatch, is climbing up the back of the boat. And I've, of course, already extended my hand back help him on the boat without looking to see who it was. And he knew exactly what was going on and knew exactly what was going to happen and purposely stood up on the boat in such a way that my hand went to the place that I don't ever, ever, ever want it to go or think about it going. And he laughed his ass off. Yeah, and I washed my hand in peroxide and acid for the next week or so. So he and I was much younger, prettier back then. So I think maybe that's why he did it, or maybe he just did it for a laugh. But who knows?
That's a good story. I like it.
All right, so folks. On that note, we will wrap up this episode of Legacy Survival Stories.
Yeah, it was fun. Thanks a lot for having us.
Thank you very much for coming, gents. We can do it like this. We might end up doing this a little more often this
week. Can we have Peter Gibbs next time?
We'll try. Well, do you want any of the rest of us here, or do you just want to have some?
Just
have one.
The two of them alone on the island with the tuna can.
That's right. You two and a can of tuna. Okay, folks. So thanks again. Thanks for listening. And we'll see you next time on Legacy Survival Stories. Take care.
You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Stitcher, and almost anywhere you can find podcasts. Please subscribe and help us move up the charts with a 5-star rating. If you have a story to tell or know of someone who does, please contact us at legacysurvivalstories, all one word, @gmail.com. You can also find us at legacysurvivalstories.buzzsprout.com.
Legacy Survival Stories.